Hulk Hogan's here! Hulk Hogan is in the building!
You're damn right he is!
Go get him, Hulk, sir!
Hulk Hogan arrived! Hulk!
What is he doing?
My God!
Hulk Hogan has betrayed WCW! He is the third man!
Look at
this picture!
Oh, my God!
Probably the lowest shot ever given to professional wrestling. That man did right there, Hulk Hogan.
I hope you love it.
Can you just sold your soul to the devil.
July 7th, 1996, Tracy Chapman's Gimme One Reason is the hottest song in the land. The number one movie stars Will Smith as he saves America from aliens in Independence Day. Travis turns 2 years old, and WCW changes wrestling forever.
I turned 2 years old on Independence Day.
You did. You did. This is the Federation. I'm Tyler Fudge.
And I'm Travis Fudge.
This is episode 151, WCW Bash at the Beach, 1996. You can follow us on Twitter at The Federation. You can go on Facebook, The Federation Podcast. T-shirts at whatamaneuver.net. PayPal, federationpodcast@gmail.com. And then also, if you wanted to become a regular subscriber to giving us your money, you can go to Patreon, just like Ty Loney, Chris Savage, Christopher Spaulding, Big Body Sam. Big Body Sam is PayPal, but I mean, who's counting? And you can check me out on the Semi Awesome Podcast on the Fat Dog Network every second Friday, I guess. Yeah. More to come on that. Well, there'll be more shows added, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, go check it out.
You can see Tyler in.
You can see me picking video. My nose. You can see me picking my nose.
It's what everyone paid to see.
That's what I paid to see.
They're not paying.
That's what I paid to see. But Travis, how are you doing?
Doing good, doing good. We're reviewing Bash at the Beaches.
Bash at the Beaches.
Yeah.
There's two beaches, apparently.
Oh, according to Dusty Rhodes, it's Bash at the Beaches.
Dusty Rhodes slurred a lot of words this week.
You know what? I love WCW thematic setups.
I love their backgrounds.
First thematic setup we've gotten, because they never did a thematic setup in 89 or 90 for like Halloween Havoc or anything like that.
No.
So I really enjoyed it, and yeah, this was a breath of fresh air to watch. I found nice show.
It was a good show. Yeah,
a couple bad wrestling matches. But
there was a couple, but I mean, as a whole, the show was entertaining.
It felt special, you know.
Yeah. We'll get into it more, but in my opinion, the commentary did a really good job at leading you on to the end of the pay per view. And who the third person will be, including like the little skits going in to see Mean Gene backstage, where he's, you know, going through the rumors and everything. That's all cool too.
Those Gene skits were really good. I got a little sick of the commentary, I'm not gonna lie, because throughout the Nitros leading up to this Bash at the Beach show, like since the Great American Bash, every single match has not felt important at all.
Yeah, I get
because
that.
Because it's actually been every match they're talking about the NWO.
Oh, really?
It's a little much, because it's almost like they're trying to put everything to the wayside.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Not get anyone else over. Like, you look at the world champion on this show. He doesn't feel like a world champion.
No.
The tag champs aren't on the show, and they just won the titles on...
Who are the tag team champs right now?
Well, on the June 24th, 1996 Nitro.
Which, by the way, this is a preview of Federation on Shuffle on Patreon.
Yes.
For $5 a month.
You betcha. And on this episode, the Outsiders come out with baseball bats, stealing Sting's gimmick that he would just use in mere months.
Well, I mean, Sting stealing his gimmick, their gimmick.
Yes, sorry. And in the midst of this triple threat tag team match between Harlem Heat, the Steiner Brothers, and the current tag champs, Sting and Luger at that point, who were tag champs for a long time. Like,
yeah.
You don't even know it, but like because they don't tell you.
Well, they were tag champs on the first show.
Yes.
Right,
and
uncensored. Like, they were tag champs.
A bummer of a run. But the Outsiders end up showing up in the crowd with the said baseball bats, and everyone just stops paying attention to the match. Except for Harlem Heat. They roll up Lex Luger, get the pin, they leave. with the tag titles, and Luger just stands up and no-sells that he just lost the tag titles. And he's just staring at them, just staring at the outsiders. It was something else, man.
James Vanderbeek just sent out a tweet.
He stole my fucking GIF.
What do you mean your GIF?
He stole my GIF.
What do you mean he stole your GIF?
Tyler, I promoted a Federation on Shuffle with that match.
Yep.
Between Giant and Haystacks.
Yeah.
And that was the GIF I used to promote the episode. I made it myself. And I never saw that GIF on the internet until then.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, shit.
I'm not calling him out. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'm going to find that in your timeline, tweet it, and say Federation did it first.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to have to do.
That's probably what's going to happen after this episode, actually.
But Travis, let's not dance around the fact that we don't know who the third member of the NWO really is. It's probably the biggest angle in wrestling that decade. Easily, actually, that decade, biggest angle.
One of the biggest moments in modern wrestling history.
Yeah, you could say wrestling history, in my opinion.
Yeah.
That's my
historians
opinion.
Would definitely like to argue that, but don't fool yourself.
No.
Hulk Hogan is perhaps one of the biggest wrestling stars ever in the world.
Yes.
And this is the first time he turned heel since becoming a megastar.
Yeah. So
this is like what people wanted for Cena to happen.
Well, did you notice? I didn't really notice it in the crowd before, but like you look at the crowd, there's so many people just elated that Hogan's a heel.
I am so surprised at the cheering to garbage ratio.
Yeah, it was like 50-50 almost.
Like there were more cheers in the crowd than boos.
Yeah, but there was a lot of garbage.
And I don't know if, like, a couple people started to get mad and throw garbage and everyone else is like, hey,
let's fucking do it.
Oh, man. It still doesn't beat Paul Heyman turning heel in the WWE CW and visibly getting hit in the head with a full drink bottle.
Well, fucking Scott Hall gets hit in the face with a fucking beer.
Does he?
Yeah. Not a can, but, like, a glass.
Oh, and Gene is getting, pummeled. He's dodging.
He's even, like, being like, don't, guys, stop.
Yeah, that angle was fantastic. I've only seen garbage get paled into the ring that much in three instances, and that would be the Bash at the Beach promo.
Yeah.
The Paul Heyman turning heel and letting Big Show defeat Rob Van Dam for the ECW title, or whoever it was. I can't even fucking remember who it was at this point.
Yeah.
And Jeff
Pretty
Jarrett.
Pretty sure it was Rob Van Dam.
Jeff Jarrett winning the King of the Mountain in 2006 and Earl Hebner screwing over the entire fucking baby faces three times. And those are probably very, very low rent garbage paling heel fucking riot shit compared to like Puerto Rico and stuff.
Well,
right?
I mean, it doesn't hold a candle to that, but, Let's take a look at Hogan and how he ended up being in the NWO. Some of the rumors, or you would like to say, or backstage news. Let's first go through who the rumored names would be. At one point in time, they were saying it would be Luger. Then they were saying it would be Crush. What a letdown that would be, Brian Adams.
Fuck yeah!
Jesus Christ, Mabel.
Summer '69 backwards to summer '96.
Not the same Brian Adams, my friend. Two D's. Two D's.
And a Y instead of an I.
Oh, yeah, so it is too. Mabel. King Mabel himself was rumored to be.
So is this a real rumor? Okay, so
These are all the names that I seen in the Observer when
I read them. Okay, that's cool because I don't want to do a whole fucking reference podcast bit.
You're talking about like the Eric Bischoff deal?
Yeah, getting absurdly pissed off that Mabel was even referenced, and then Dave Meltzer saying he didn't reference Mabel as a guy that would be in there. So you just blew the top off of that.
Yeah, no, he did. I mean, I read it myself.
Backwards handshake Dave Meltzer. Can't remember his fucking stories in the Observer.
Yep. After this, too, after these names were rumored, and there was always that hint that like it was going to be a WWF guy, right? That's why the rumors were Luger, Crush, and Mabel, because those were guys that weren't really working. Luger was already in WCW, and it's just what names would be easy to go in. The next one was hinted at on the hotline. And what name do you think that would be?
The Ultimate Warrior.
Bret Hart.
Yeah, it makes sense.
WCW hinted that on the hotline.
He was off. He wasn't working.
He wasn't working.
He hadn't signed his new deal yet.
Yep.
Like, he was, I'm pretty sure, negotiating with the WCW.
He had a contract. Bret Hart. Remember, you've heard Dave Meltzer talk about it. He's seen the Bret Hart contract from 96.
Yeah.
That's this era. And I would love to see that contract.
Yeah, Dave said he had it at one point or something like that, too.
Yeah.
Looking back, it makes almost no sense that nobody thought Hogan would be the third man. He's been off TV for months.
Mm-hmm.
He's been off TV since Uncensored.
But that's the thing. That's what Hogan's MO has been for about a year. Like, he doesn't do really much TV. Hogan was just do four to five big shows a year, and that was it.
But they don't even reference Hogan on TV either.
No.
Like, they tried to make you forget about him, even though he was doing movies and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's almost like they purposely tried to make you forget about Hogan. And I know that Hogan had trepidations from the moment before he stepped out there.
Yeah.
He was afraid to do this whole thing. So it just makes me, like, wonder, you know.
Well, let me put some ease to that wonder. Hogan agreed to do the heel turn 11 days before the show.
11 days?
Yeah. So, like, they couldn't really plan for it. You know what I mean? So, like, he was just off TV for the sake of being off TV. They didn't mention him just because there's nothing to mention. And when you say that, what can I say? Dave Meltzer had reported at one point in time that a reader had sent him a letter saying that he's working on the set with Hogan and Roddy Piper during a movie. And Hogan had told Piper that he was the third guy.
Hmm.
And he's probably going to do it. So, like, there was the rumor that Hogan could be the third guy. Like, it was possible. So, you know,
it was out there.
It was kind of out there. Nobody, it's not like people were real, you know, privy to the fact that it could be, because I believe that was reported the Observer before the show. So, like, it's not even like people, you know, that had to get mailed out to people. You didn't just know it, right? So, like, you probably got this
it's
after.
It's not social media today where someone would have fucking immediately tweeted out, OMG, I just heard fucking Hulk Hogan talk to Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
He's the third man.
Shit was completely different then.
And three fucking websites reported, and then 10 others, and so on and so on.
Yeah. And Hogan, he largely agreed to do this because he knew that there was no place left for him in WCW, because his contract was coming to expire after the Hog Wild pay-per-view. And he knew that at this point in time, just numbers have dwindled. You know, just buy rates were happening without him, all that noise. So he knew that he was becoming expendable. So Hogan, his contract was not bringing in the numbers that they needed. So something had to change, and Hogan knew that this could be that something that could change it and keep him on top of WCW and on top of wrestling for a few more years. So with the Hogan's great timing, he left WCW to do a movie with Roddy Piper and Gary Busey just before the NBA playoffs changed in the Nitro time slot. So Nitro's ratings go down.
Yeah,
Hogan left.
Been a story that he leaves TV at the most opportune times, and then when they have the bad rating spurts, it's almost like, oh, you need me again, don't
right,
you?
Right, right.
Yeah.
But then they switched to 2 hours.
Right.
And
the
ratings went
right
up.
Right after Slamboree.
Yeah, and the ratings started to climb exponentially. And this is without Hogan. So that was another point where Hogan was like, well, shit. You know, like, this is all coming around. So this weakened all of his leverage, and basically the belief was that the program with Nash and Hall was hot enough that it would have drawn without Hogan anyways. So really, the fact that Hogan was involved doesn't really need the NWO to take off.
Well, the only thing that would have dwindled Hogan from not doing this would have been the merch sales. He would
That's
lose
true.
A lot of merch money.
He would.
But luckily enough, the NWO was hot enough that it became probably the second most selling t-shirt in all of wrestling in the 90s.
Yeah.
next to what was going on at the WWF with Austin 316, which is still the most highest selling wrestling shirt of all time.
Yes, yes.
So,
which is crazy with the NWO. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
NWO has to be number two. Has to be.
You know, well.
But then WCW, I bet you WCW doesn't even have a list of how many NWO shirts they sold.
Probably not.
Because, well, you never knew. Right, because like Booker T action figures will come up as Hogan action figures.
Yeah, that's true.
Right,
because then Hogan would get the money and royalties for all of these other motherfuckers.
Yeah, so you can't really tell what was what at that point in time. You know what I mean?
That's
I remember buying a WCW T-shirt from Riffs and having a different name on it on the receipt. Because right? You had a Sting shirt, right?
I don't know, man.
Or did I have a Sting shirt?
You had a lot of cool wrestling shirts. You had the Wolfpack shirt.
I did have a Wolfpack shirt, yeah. I had an NWO shirt, like a steel NWO shirt. And then there was...
I didn't even have a WCW backpack. I had a Stone Cold backpack.
Yeah.
All these kids that didn't even like wrestling had like Wolfpack backpacks and Goldberg backpacks. And I'm like, fuck, you're cool. You talk about... Goldberg's cool, right?
Yeah.
Who's Goldberg?
Yeah, right.
Fucking poor Travis, that kid, man.
Oh, Trax Earl?
No, me.
Oh. But, like, just to turn it all around, Hogan does ultimately be the fox, the cunning fox that he truly is, and does work himself into being the centerpiece of the biggest angle that decade. So
he main events next month.
Yeah. Hogan main events Travis for like 2 years.
Hogan goes over.
All the time. Until Billy Kidman comes around.
Well, no, he does put over Goldberg at the Georgia Dome.
Yes.
And Sting.
Yes.
That's it.
That is about it, really. That really is about it. Like, he will only put over Luger for a day.
He put over Luger on Nitro. Yes, he did. Other than that, I don't even think he put over Brett. I don't even think him and Brett had a real program.
I don't think they did, no. I really don't think they did. And so with this whole NWO thing going on, there wasn't really much else to focus on news-wise. News was all NWO. And so like, there's not a whole lot to go by, but the WCW did do a Northeast Invasion Tour, in quotations.
A hostile takeover, if you will.
Kind of, yeah. Because, you know, we got Nash and we got Hall now, so let's go up to the Northeast WWE Stomping Grounds and let's see what we can draw there. But that's the thing. It didn't really sell at all.
Well, let's see. Let's put the lowest drawing WWE champion in history in an area that we never tour and we'll get gangbusters out of it, right?
Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect run there.
In Hartford, they drew 5,700 fans, only 3,900 paying. Philadelphia, they drew 5,600 fans, 3,200 paying. New York, you'd think the Mecca, New York. If they did 5,700 in Hartford, they got to do 8,000-9,000 in New York. What do you think their number was?
4,000.
4,500. 3,700 people paying.
But if you think about it, more people paid for that show than they did for any other show.
That is very true. Hartford was 39. But yet, the Hartford gate was 61,000 and New York gate was 90.
Oh, wow.
So the New York tickets were obviously a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
And the New York show was actually 200 to 300 short of a sellout. But like... That still doesn't change the fact that you only sold 3,700 tickets.
Well, if you think about it, all of those shows are actually not bad turnouts, even though it's probably comps were involved.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
but at the same time, 5,600 people in a market that they don't really cater to.
Yeah,
and yeah,
but
you know,
that's the thing, though, right? Like, it's still not what they thought it was going to be. You know what I mean? They thought that it was going to be just gangbusters. That they were going to make all this money, and they didn't, because, I mean, you're relatively unknown in the Northeast.
And Diesel and Razor aren't fucking big draws.
No, they're not
the people that crowd came to see.
No,
they came to see Brett. They came to see Shawn. You know.
Yeah.
A couple of them might have been able to
Taker.
Yeah, Taker. Like, fuck, I didn't even think about Taker.
Yeah.
But yeah, Diesel and Razor are afterthoughts.
Yes, yes. I don't know, they're not missed on the WWF side.
Not at all. They don't even really reference it. It's hardly noticeable.
Until we get the doppelgangers.
When they start to get a little butthurt about it.
Yeah.
That was one of the worst decisions they made around that time. It really shows weakness.
Yes, it is.
Man.
The WCW, during this New York show, they figured that they would try to bring in all these big names to try to sell the show. But little did they realize that these big names were big names 30 years ago.
Oh, God. Who did they get?
Bruno Sammartino and God rest his soul, Pedro Morales, who passed away like 3 days ago.
Yeah. Fresh.
Yeah. But they figured that would draw, but it really didn't. Nobody's really going to pay to go see Bruno Sammartino just be a ref.
Just wave.
Yeah. Yeah. And Travis, let's end this news with, you know, we've talked about Glacier rumors for many episodes.
He's coming
now.
In July.
He's coming in. They did announce that he's coming in July.
The vignettes say coming in July.
Okay, well, fair. Maybe he
so
does show
we'll
up.
We'll see.
Maybe he doesn't.
We'll see.
I don't know. I do know he's on Great American Bash 97 because it auto-played. So I do
God,
know
I'd hope he'd be on Great American Bash 97.
But now they do say it was the first time they ever seen him throw a punch. So, like, how long was he...
I heard that it's egregiously long that he shows until he shows up.
Yeah.
So it's probably not July because they've only been doing the vignettes for about 3 months.
Yeah. So
yeah,
I feel
heard
like
it's
that's...
been epic like 6 months or something.
I've heard it was something outrageous. But Travis, the latest rumor is Ray Lloyd. Ding, ding, ding. Finally.
That is the
guy
that plays
Glacier. Yeah. Finally, the rumor is actually the guy that's going to play him.
Now, does whoever you got that news from, do they preface on what Ray Lloyd has done?
Literally, this is copied and pasted from The Observer. The latest rumor named to be Blood Runs Cold gimmick is Ray Lloyd. That's it.
Cool.
That's all they say.
Okay.
So, they didn't preface him having any kind of background or anything like that, but I mean, it beats the rumor being Hall and Nash and all these guys, so...
Oh, Hulk came out with blood on his jacket. He's Glacier.
He's Glacier. That's Blood Runs Cold.
Blood Runs Cold. Putting two and two together back in the 90s, man.
Yeah, there you fucking know it, baby. You fucking know it. Travis, do you have anything else to say before we go into the show itself?
Not really,
sir. Anything from like the Federations on Shuffle?
Oh, like the Nitro?
Well, like, anything else that we need to know before we go into the show?
No, there's really not much that you need to know. It's been standard stuff. Kevin Green does come back.
Oh, he does.
Yeah, Kevin Green shows up. He comes hard and he comes heavy.
I'm coming hard. I'm coming heavy.
And he says that after he whoops some ass. In the NFL season this
he's
year.
He's coming back to get Mongo?
He's going Mongo hunting.
Oh.
And in all the nice words, he pretty much tells us he's going to murder Steve Mongo McMichael.
So that's something to look forward to that will obviously never happen.
I don't think it ever happens.
No, no. Well, Travis, let's get into the show. Travis, this is Great American Bash, 1996. It's July 7th, Daytona Beach, USA.
Is that Florida?
That is Florida.
Okay.
At the Ocean Center, 8,300 people in attendance, and a 0.71 pay-per-view buy rate. What do you think that equates to?
190,000.
250.
So
not like, bad. It's not a bad one. It is basically, it's like 20 to 30,000 pay-per-view buys more than I believe Great American Bash.
Sounds about right. Like,
maybe.
It's justly deserved.
Yeah.
That's
maybe Slamboree. I don't know. There was one of them a couple months ago. Could have been uncensored.
But they've come a long way since 1990 and 1989, where they would never get a buy rate higher than, like, what was it, like 200,000 or whatnot, until this time period.
Yeah, it was something like they maybe the Starrcade that we watched got a good buy rate, the first one, and then they never ever recovered until, like, recently. You know what I mean?
You see, you plug them away as Oz, you plug them away as Master Blaster Steel and Vinny Vegas and Super Shredder. All he had to do was take a trip up north and come back, and
yeah,
buy rates go up.
Buy rates go up.
And you now, bring like, the diamond stud in there.
They're not like skyrocketing. You know what I mean?
I know.
It will start. It will begin to. But I mean, it's like anything. Nothing changes overnight. You know what I mean? Nothing will ever just pop a rating like that. But you will see the general increase. Like, if you want to look at, let's look at the ratings here for.
And just keep in mind, before you look at the ratings, this Outsiders feud has been going on since late May.
Yeah.
So it's been a long build so far.
Yes, it has. Raw at this point in time, let's run down the last couple weeks in June and the first couple weeks in July. We've got 2.3, 2.7, 2.6, and then 2.5. 2.5 is the night after Bash at the Beach. Nitro, on the other hand, is doing 3.4, 3.3, 3.3, and then 3.5. So like, even the next night after Bash at the Beach didn't really cause a big stir. You know what I mean? Like it's not like everybody was like, we need to watch Nitro. Just, it was up a point, like a 0.1.
I think as WWE starts to really get bitter about this entire deal, and they really kind of look bad in doing that, I feel like WCW looks better and better and better.
Yeah.
So I feel like, especially when they get Piper in the mix, you know, like, Piper's another big name. I'm sure that that helped with ratings, and Sting doing his thing, and that rhymed. Yeah, I mean, WCW is not a great show yet.
No.
It's got great cruiserweight matches.
Yep.
And it's still really chaotic, you know, and it's always going to be chaotic. But if you look in 6 months, WCW Nitro is a pretty fun show to watch.
I would imagine. I'm waiting until then to start really watching these Nitros.
Yeah.
Because I don't really have any interest right now, because I look at what's going on, it's like, I really could care less about John Tenta.
It's fun. I'm not going to lie. I don't regret. I don't think after this arc is done, I'm going to look back at watching these Nitros and be like, fuck, I wasted some time there. I'm loving it, but it's a pretty bad show.
As long as you're enjoying yourself, man. As long as you're enjoying yourself. Well, Travis, we talked about great cruiserweight matches. Let's talk about
the epitome best, of a great cruiserweight match.
The best match we've seen this whole arc.
Definitely.
We won't see a better match.
Rival to the Malenko and Rey match.
I suppose that was last. That was at
that was a really good match.
Great American Bash.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a really good match. This I thought was head over heels better.
Well, you think about it. That was probably the first time that Malenko and Rey worked together.
Yeah, they would end up having like 5 or 6 more classics.
Oh yeah, they've already had 2.
There you go.
They wrestled again the next night on Nitro for like 20 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. In I would say a better match.
That's fair. That's fair. I can get that.
But it makes sense, too, because you have more people on, like, on you when you have a television match.
Yeah, you need more eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Psychosis making his debut in this timeline. I can't remember if he was on a TNA timeline episode.
No.
Psychosis hasn't been on our podcast before, has he?
No, he has not. We've never reviewed an old WCW show. So, no.
That's true, yeah.
And we haven't reviewed anything with the Mexicools.
Or ECW.
Or ECW One Night Stand, or ECW. This might be his debut in WCW as well.
It could very well be. You do have Mike Tenay on commentary to really guide you along and at least help out all these guys.
He is so good.
Wealth of knowledge, yeah. He is. He really just brings a lot of character, a lot of insight, and just knowledge to the world of Lucha Libre.
He knows so much about that little niche. It's unreal that this little tiny little white boy knows so much about Lucha Libre.
Yeah.
And it's like, are you Mexican? Or
Can you Tanay that again? Right? What a dad joke. They prefaced this match by saying that these two guys traveled all night and all day to get here from Mexico because they had a show. Conan was the same thing. Travis just burnt his mustache here. Conan was sporting a little bandage.
Side of his head.
Yes. You want to center that a bit?
Oh, you want to have a ciggy too?
Yeah. Gonna let's do this. Let's get this all situated.
Yeah, you
want to pass me over that fire machine too?
Fire machine?
Yeah.
Right here.
Thank you. Thank you. Great riveting fucking podcast. But no, this match was absolutely fantastic. They go back and forth, avoiding every maneuver you could ever think of. Psychosis then hits a spinning heel kick that just sends poor old Ray completely out to the fucking mats. He's just out like a goddamn light. Then Psychosis tries to commit suicide by going headfirst into the guardrail.
That tope? My God. My God. But you know what made up for it, Tyler? The immediate follow-up with that beautiful guillotine leg drop. Nobody does it better.
Nobody does a guillotine leg drop.
You fucking tell me someone that does a leg drop better than Psychosis.
There's nobody.
Psychosis in the late 90s and early and mid-90s?
Yeah. Like, the way he comes down, it's just his form on the way down looks so crisp. And it's not like... Like, when he's going down, you can't tell that his leg is crooked. Like Matt Hardy when he does a leg drop. You could tell the leg that's coming down is completely bent so that it doesn't crush. Psychosis goes down with the feet heading forward.
And I wonder who has more back problems now.
Oh, Matt, obviously. Psychosis is coming here.
It'll be fun.
That's the one where I think I might get a picture. I might buy the...
Apparently he's a huge dickhead.
I don't give a fuck.
I know. I'm just saying. It might be a Tommy Dreamer situation where he's one of the best guys in wrestling.
At least you're paying for the picture.
Yeah.
He's going to be nice to your face.
That's true.
At least you think so.
Maybe asking a wrestler for a photo after he's old and out of shape and wanting to go back and shower, and then you ask him for a photo. I could see them being upset about it.
No, man. He was just standing around talking.
Oh, okay. Fair enough then. Fuck him.
He was literally talking to Hat Guy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Red Hat.
Sign Guy.
Sign Guy. Yeah.
So Psychosis' theme, Tyler.
Yes.
Does it remind you of a TV show?
Not really. I remember the theme doesn't stick out to me. I remember it being lackluster from watching the show.
I get vivid memories of watching Tia Carrere on Relic Hunter when Psychosis comes out.
Did I ever tell you a story about this girl that I went to school with that we used to call Relic Hunter?
What?
Yeah, since you brought it up, might as well talk about it. Just to not name names, let's just call her P, right? So she was always getting hit on by this guy that they called Relic in Point Lumen. They called him Relic because he was so goddamn old. He was a relic, right? So
would I know?
Relic?
No, the person that...
Probably not, no. Okay. No. So he was always hitting on her, and being about 40 years in difference, she was getting upset, right? And so the last time he did it, she's turned around and waffled him, heels right into the fucking dick hole. And he went down, and I believe he puked. And so ever since then, we all called her Relic Hunter.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah.
That's a good nickname.
It is. Yeah.
It's actually like solid.
Yeah. But, I mean, this match you can even call a relic. Not even a relic. A relic before. I guess you could call it a relic.
You want to talk about relics? Let's talk about a Heenan timely cultural reference that he makes.
What was this?
To Rey Mysterio's bald head.
Oh, how he looks. Who
he looks
say?
Like he looked, Demi Moore. G.I. Jane.
Yeah. Yeah. He did say that. That was something else. And then he said Psychosis looked like somebody as
Peg
well.
Peg Bundy,
yes.
Kathy Sigal.
Yes. I can see the Peg Bundy thing, because like the wig that Psychosis uses here is a wig, right?
It has to be. That hair is fucking crazy.
Yeah, it has to be a wig.
It's fucking weird looking.
It looks like a wig.
It looks like Kane's hair the night he took his mask off.
Kinda, yeah.
Like ultimate,
which was a wig itself.
Like, just like staticky. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, unnatural. But Travis, let's go over some of the fantastic spots in this match. Because if we went to just like call out every spot, it would be here absolutely forever. This episode.
No, we're not going to Joey Styles a podcast.
No, there was countless Hurricane Ranas by Ray, which at this point in time is big news in American wrestling. That wasn't being done. Leg drops by Psy, Kosas, like the guillotine leg drop. He does a senton outside on the Ray, which looked absolutely fucking killer.
Ray clipped his knee on a tope.
Yeah, Ray clips his knee on a tope. We get a top cope Hurricane Rana by Ray onto the apron to the outside.
Speaking of the apron, that monkey flip into the post on the apron was fucking great.
Ray hits his head on the mat too at one of these Hurricane Ranas.
Fuck, man.
Yeah. And then you get a springboard acai moonsault by Ray, or a modified
twisting.
Corkscrew.
It was twisting, yeah.
Corkscrew acai moonsault. So many fucking... They pulled out all the stops. They knew that, like, we have good matches together. We have fantastic matches in ECW. Let's show the world, 250,000 people paying customers, what Lucha Libre is all about.
I'd like to know what it feels like to be someone that only watches American wrestling and then seeing this match for your first time and seeing this style.
Yeah. Like, it's got to blow your fucking mind.
Yeah.
Really, though. It really has to blow your fucking mind.
Like, to be our age in, like, 1996.
Yeah.
And then, like, watch this match and it'll be, like, the first time you've ever seen something like this. Like, fuck, man.
Yeah. It has to be a shock. Like, you wouldn't even know what
to
watch.
I think that's why the crowd is so silent for most of it, because just like...
It's like, what are we watching?
Yeah.
But, like, at the same time, too, like, when Ray would do something crazy, they would just go
absolutely insane.
You get a
new one
and
all, yeah.
By the end of the match, they were pretty into it. It took them a little while. By the end of the match, they had the crowd, and the crowd was really excited going into the next match, which was absolutely horrible. But we'll get to that.
I like the match.
Oh, my God. You would. You would. But Ray goes up top for it. Actually, one last thing I want to mention. Psychosis domes himself on the guardrail.
Does he?
Well, like, during the tope at the beginning of the match.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, he does.
But then he picks up Ray and throws him on the guardrail neck first. And, like, Ray just fucking damn near kills himself on that guardrail. It looked unreal. I'm sure it connected at some point in time. It had to. But let's get into the finish of this match. Ray goes up for a springboard Hurricane Rana, but Psychosis reverses it into a sit-out powerbomb. Psychosis then goes up top for a Splash Mountain.
Splash Mountain, last ride, sit-out powerbomb,
from
whatever
the top
you
rope.
Want to call it, right?
But Ray reverses it into a Hurricane Rana and gets the win. Like, it's a great fucking finish. You've seen it coming a mile away, because it's literally the exact opposite of the spot just before it. Ray goes for a top rope Hurricane or springboard Hurricane Rana, reverse to a powerbomb. Psychosis goes for a powerbomb, reverse to Hurricane Rana for a win. So, like, great finish, great match, unbelievable.
You know, Tyler, I don't think Rey Mysterio is that inspired by the Lucha Libres.
No,
because in this match, Mike Tenay says one of his biggest inspirations growing up was Scott Steiner.
Yes.
Where does all these Hurricane Ranas come from?
Scott Steiner.
Not any fucking luchas. Not Rey Mysterio Sr. diving out for no reason to the outside and landing on a set of stairs.
No. Yeah, Scott Steiner was in that match too, wasn't he?
Scott Steiner? Was that like the weird Russian dudes?
Oh, it was Zangief. Maybe not. I don't fucking know.
It was during that
tournament.
Tag tournament.
The Starrcade tag tournament.
Bringing it all back. Conan ties it full circle.
Yes. But Travis, we should let the people listening know that what we're about to do could derail the podcast. We are about to smoke a joint of Violator Kush. And by the sounds of that name, I feel like it's going to violate me, obviously. Can you pull up the... I told you to have that handy. And what did you do? You left it on the fucking table.
Editing magic can help fix
maybe
this.
I'll edit it. Maybe I won't. Maybe the Violator will cause me to not do it. Who knows?
Okay, kids. Let's look up Violator Kush. Violator Kush is a pure indica from old school Dutch breeders Barney's Farm. This is quite different than Skittles from that fucking Murder Mountain show from the fucking Dookie Boys. Bernie Firms to Dookie Boys. So, this is an indica that has a musty, earthy smell and taste and provides a strong body buzz and will leave you stuck to your chair. It's a strong indica, and I'm just going to read a review here. Super strong, but maybe a bit too strong. It's hard to talk normal and focus on anything. Definitely something to use at home only. Thoughts are clear, but it's hard to do anything with them.
So, just so you guys know, that's the territory we're about to enter. So, luckily, what we've got going on right now is Mean Gene is going to have a little conversation with Conan. And here you guys go. You know, just listen to that while we spark this up.
All right, I know for a fact that last night you wrestled in Mexico. You've had a hard day of travel in jetting to Los Angeles, then back here to Florida. Tonight, I talked earlier on with the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. He seems to me to be very confident. I might even say, Conan, he is overconfident. This title is on the line. Flair wants it badly.
Well, maybe he's got reason to be overconfident. You know, he's done it all. He's won that world title 13 times. Nobody else has done that. But tonight I'm overly cautious because everywhere he goes, he has an entourage. I haven't been here long enough to form an alliance. I haven't been here long enough to be afforded that luxury. But I'll tell you something, Ric Flair. If your manager gets in the match, I'll cripple him. If one of the women get into the match, I'll clothesline him. If that football player gets into the match, I'll chop block him. But Ric Flair, I'm going back home with this U.S. title.
All right, I would say this man has got his act together after a long day of travel. Conan with a title defense coming up here at the Bash at the Beach.
Arriba Mexico, Conan.
Any of your women get in there, I'll cripple them.
Yep, so keep that in mind for that match. If the women get involved, Conan's going to do something about it. But Trav's up next is a match that you really enjoyed. And, I mean...
The first and only of its kind.
Did. Yeah,
Carson
a fucking
City Silver Dollar match.
A fucking six coins in a fucking sock.
And you think Russo came up with the on a pole matches?
At least Russo made the poles attainable.
Yeah, yeah, this was some shoddy, shoddy work on WCW's part. Like, holy fuck. The pole was about, I don't know, an inch in diameter, 2 inches in diameter, maybe?
It was a 2-inch pole for sure.
And it was secured at the bottom, a really absurdly long pole, so half of it was wobbling.
Well, let's put it this way, okay? Big Bubba, Big Boss Man, goes onto the top turnbuckle. He can't reach it.
Yeah, and there's about a couple feet in clearance after a probably 6-foot man is on top of the top rope.
Oh, Big Boss Man, six foot five?
Yeah, exactly. So it's absurd. It's almost like that they made this whole match out to be a rib on the two big guys in this match that
really
obviously
though,
can't fucking do this.
Like you knew going into this, Tenta could not do it.
Yes, exactly, right?
Like, that was obvious that Tenta was not going to be able to get
and
there.
At least that in this match, there's a reason why I'm going to say that this wasn't that bad.
Well, it had fun aspects. For sure it did.
Because, like, there was a story to it where Tenta knew he couldn't climb up, so he got at the straps. He was going to take the pole down by the straps, you know. Tenta does look like a sewer dweller now, though. Now that he cut off his beard, now he has a mustache and he has half of a side of balding hair. He looks like he is a sewer monster in, like, the Ninja Turtles.
My question is, why is he still fucking cutting his hair? Like, are we supposed to believe that his hair hasn't grown for 2 months?
Right. He is actually shaving the side of his hair frequently because it's pristinely bald.
It is. It is. It's like cue ball.
It's amazing. And, like, you know going in that Jimmy Hart has to have a way in this finish because...
I wasn't even thinking of it.
Really?
No, it didn't even clue in.
Well, I wrote down in my notes that I'm trying to think of people that could climb this pole. Maybe Ray. Maybe Jimmy Hart because he's scrawny enough.
And maybe the ref.
But that's about it. I did like the brawling aspects of this match with the choking of the belt and punching him with the belt. He fucking hit him hard with that leather belt at one point.
I will say the choke spots on the rope were good and they were clever. And you know, it's... There's so many gimmicks in this goddamn match, though. There's you got the pole, you got scissors, you got tape, you've got a belt.
True.
So much.
I had hopes and aspirations of when Tenta was taped to the rope that he would chew his way through the tape.
Harkering back to a former gimmick. Shark teeth.
Shark.
Yeah.
Would have been great. Would have been great. He could have turned back into Shark.
He could have.
Or the Shark John Tenta.
Yeah, he could have. I mean,
the sewer shark.
Sewer shark, yeah. So.
But anyways, he cuts the tape off after Bubba grabs scissors. He tries to cut the other half off of his head. He gets low blowed because of it. And that's when he cuts the tape off, as I previously said. So he goes for the straps again, and Bubba denies the straps. Bubba forces Jimmy Hart to climb the pole at this point. And Hart gets to the top. The pole is fucking wobbling all over the place.
Yeah.
It looks so unsafe.
Yeah.
And Tenta is, in fact, waiting for Jimmy at the bottom of the pole, and his sock of coins hits Bubba in the jaw with the sock of coins, and he wins.
Yeah.
That was it.
Now, let's not preface over the fact that Jimmy Hart on top of that pole was probably one of the greatest sights I'd seen in all of 1996 wrestling so far.
It was resembling of Cornette dangling from that scaffold.
I guess,
you
yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah. But like, you will see Jimmy Hart in that pole, because it will make its way into the artwork in some way, shape, or form. Like, that will happen.
I'm surprised that they never did Jimmy Hart on a pole.
That could be
they
a great
they did Judy Bagwell on a forklift.
They did. Jimmy Hart, though, yeah. Even, like, his megaphone or something. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Like, that's is that a feud, or is that an angle or feud that was ever done where, like, somebody took Jimmy Hart's megaphone so he would shut the fuck up, and then they had the fight for the megaphone back? It just doesn't seem to make sense, because Jimmy Hart being a heel, you can't really have him win the gimmick match to get his, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. I could see a babyface taking the megaphone and destroying it.
Yeah.
But I feel like now that the NWO starts on this show,
yeah,
that a lot of plans that WCW choose or have chosen to make in the past are going to be scrapped. I feel like a lot of these feuds that are being built right now are just going to immediately just get cut.
Probably.
Because the NWO becomes such a big force in this company that you have so many people in the NWO, and all of them are feuding with other people, and there's no feuds outside the NWO other than the Cruiserweight division.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Yeah. Man,
that's
true.
How bad it gets.
Yeah. Well, yeah, over time. But we still got some time before they completely dilute the NWO.
I want to make a bet with you right now. Like, just like a no, nothing on the line wager.
I feel like this bet is, when are we going to get sick of the NWO?
When does the Dungeon of Doom end?
Oh, fuck, I don't know. I really don't know.
I don't know. I've never known. I'm wondering what time, how fast does it fizzle out at this point?
I bet you they stay until at least Halloween Havoc.
It's got to be until
maybe
Giant
not,
goes,
like
goes to the
months.
NWO, right?
Well,
like
Giant that, goes to the NWO round. Does he go around Hog Wild?
No, because he loses the title at that show. He faces Hogan.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. You know, it's been promised to promoters or advertisers, especially Slim Jim, that Hog Wild will feature a main event of Hogan and Savage.
Wow.
Yep. That's a promise.
Well, that does not happen.
No. That's all I could think of when you're like, it's Hogan and Giant, because everything I've been reading the Observers is that it's going to be Hogan and Savage.
The only reason why I know it's Hogan and Giant is because that is the first time, I'm pretty sure to my knowledge, that we get the infamous NWO spray paint job on the back.
Yeah, no, I remember seeing that Hog Wild at Sturgis.
And that's at Sturgis. Yeah. Like, that happens in the Hog Wild setting.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. And it's got Hogan without the black
stubble. He's just got the handlebars. Yeah. No, I remember that now, yeah. And Travis, one last thing before we leave this match in the dust. Did you notice the protrusion rate of John Tenta's nipples? Man, were
is this like Nick on the new episode of Big Mouth?
He could cut glass. Like, I'm surprised they weren't bothering him the whole match.
He's aroused by steel poles.
He could be aroused by steel poles. That could very well be it. He could have been, because where he's a shark, it could have resembled a fishing pole. and he got a little apprehensive.
The sock was bait.
The sock could have been bait, yeah. He's been baited with a sock before. Another dad joke. You have anything else to say before we? I'll be glad to not talk about this match anymore. But I mean, the next two matches, I also have no interest in at all.
I didn't say much about this match when I talked about it. That probably made it sound like I enjoyed it, but I did thoroughly enjoy this match. I thought it was pretty fun to watch. One thing to notice for after looking at the next matches, I noticed in this match that the guy that does the introductions. It sounds like the English guy on New Japan.
Oh, well, it's definitely not piped into the... It's dubbed over. Yeah.
It's dubbed over, but it sounds like the guy that does the English introductions in New Japan, where he sounds kind of Japanese, but he's doing a real forced English accent.
Yeah, no, I get you there. Yeah, I don't know who that... That wouldn't be Penzer, would it? Is it Penzer? That would be Penzer.
No, I think that they'd be dubbing over Penzer. If that's the case, because Penzer is doing WCW right now.
Like, I don't know if it's dubbed over or like the music is just so low, but it does feel like his mic is not piped into the audio. It just feels so far away. That's my opinion anyways. But Travis, do you want to hear what Kevin Sullivan and the Giant have to say?
Of course I do.
Representing World Championship Wrestling, the Giant, Kevin Sullivan. Tonight, Arn Anderson, Chris Benoit, two out of the four horsemen.
Promo, by the
and
way.
Considering you, Mr. Sullivan, no disrespect.
Sting.
Things don't look real.
Luger and Macho Man.
Hey, Travis, you ready to hear what Sting Company has to say?
Yes, I am.
Goddamn right.
Again, gentlemen, I thank you very much. It is very tense back here in the locker room area coming up tonight. A match that many have labeled as a hostile takeover match. These outsiders are going to have a third man joining them. They're going to be facing the Macho Man, Randy Savage, former tag team champions. They've held numerous titles. Of course, the
Jesus
current
Christ
reigning
me, Gene, get to the
WCW
goddamn point.
World Television Champ, the
God
total package,
soul,
Lex Luger,
fuck.
Sting. Guys, I don't think I've addressed this. I'm assuming everybody is in the building right now, Macho. And who do you think their third man is going to be?
You know what? I don't care. I know it's going to be somebody. So that's really all that matters to me. Because he's going to get hurt just like those other guys are going to get
Macho
hurt.
Macho Man being
this
the hype man.
This is equal opportunity, equal war type situation. Yeah. We're going to take him out, are we not?
Lex Luger, it's going to be very, very difficult to prepare when you don't know who this third man is.
That's very true, Gene, but we are prepared. You know, we've waited a long time for this. They've made a lot of noise, haven't
easily,
they?
Easily
a lot
the
of
worst
loud
part
noise.
Of the promo.
They've come in and talking
Macho
trash. The WCW, what's an honor and privilege to be chosen for this team? I speak on behalf of all of us, and we will represent it well. We will represent it to the best of our abilities. And you know what, guys?
What is it?
You know what point needs to be made here?
Make the point, what is it?
You've thrown announcers through stages. You've talked real loud, but now actions speak louder than words. Isn't that right, Stinger?
You know what the unknown does, Mean Gene? The unknown gives me a real dry mouth. The unknown makes me a nervous wreck. The unknown puts chills right up and down my spine.
I like that.
The unknown gives me goosebumps all over my body. And you know something? It does the same thing to the Macho Man. It does the same thing to the Total Package. We are a team, and we are pumped and ready.
We're up for this one. You guys better get it.
Let's just go do it.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. We are the Total Package. Lex Luger, Sting, and the Macho Man.
For the rest of my life, I would just like to have Macho Man. I know it can't happen. He's passed on. But for every single promo up until then, to have Macho Man hyping up who's doing the promo. And, you know, telling the interviewer to fuck off with their stupid questions. And, you know, being like, get to the point. Get to the point. Ooh, I like that. Dope.
It would be nice to have Randy Savage reacting to stuff.
Doing commentary, you know? Like, oh my fucking God. That promo was bananas. Sting doing a fucking interview with his two little stingers, man.
Like, oh, yeah. It was something else. But, yes. It was something else. This brings us to
Did you like my shitty Macho Man impersonation? I know everyone has one. You have a much better one.
I mean, my lips are way too dry to do a Macho Man impression because I've got a split right here.
Oh, yeah.
And it hurts like a son of a bitch.
Classic minus 40 winter.
Yeah. So I'm going to save the Macho Man impression for now and not do it because even laughing hurts me so much. But let's go to the Lord of the Ring taped fist match between Diamond Dallas Page and fucking Jim Duggan. This match was 5 minutes too long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this match was bad.
5 minutes long.
I don't blame DDP at all for it.
No. No.
The poor guy sold very well for Duggan.
Yeah, and Duggan is abysmal.
So looking back at Duggan, he reminds me of Eugene.
Yeah, yeah. You know? He's got the kind of the same scheme.
He's very simple.
Yeah, simple mind.
I do love that on the Nitros, Duggan and his whole family have been hyped up as taped fist masters.
Oof.
They're masters of the taped fist match, particularly Hacksaw himself and his grandmother. This is not a lie. This is what's been hyped up. Since the whole thing where Duggan found the ring in the toilet, that was the next layer of story.
This is
to this feud.
Blowing my mind. Like, so Duggan finds, because Duggan, this is before Duggan's janitor days.
Duggan is literally 80s Hacksaw Jim Duggan right now.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's it. He's not a janitor. He is the 2x4 slinging blue trunks wearing
America loving
ho.
Yeah, he's a ho.
He's
use a ho, Hacksaw. Use a ho.
Yeah.
Ho for show. But yeah, this match is fucking horrible. Did they not forget to tell the guys before them that tape is an integral part of our match? Please don't fuck with it.
Yeah, and it's the first spot that they used, essentially. Heenan calling Duggan and his grandparents punchy was pretty great. And then continuously called Duggan punchy. So every time in
See,
my
all
notes,
that was lost on me because I didn't know what was going on storyline-wise, right? Like, those little punchy remarks were nothing.
I just loved it. Like, every time Duggan got offense, I was like, oh, he's getting punchy again.
Oh, fucking Heenan. What a lovely guy. But Travis, all I got to say about this match is that it sucked, and DDP wins via Diamond Cutter after kicking the rope into the dick of Duggan. Ho. Ho no mo.
We should put a count on how many people are badly sunburnt in this show too.
Oh, who was badly sunburnt?
DDP's back is fucking blood red.
He's a fucking pale ass motherfucker anyways at this point in time, so.
And Giant is badly sunburnt too.
Giant probably just got drunk and fell asleep on the beach.
So, I don't know. Yeah, I was hoping that you noticed too, so we can get a definitive count of how many people at the same time fell asleep on that beach drunk.
Could have been a few of them. Could have been a few of them. That's for sure. I mean, like Nash looks a little uneven on his tan. His tan just seems a little off.
Nash, he seems to be the spray tan kind of guy.
That could very well be it.
You know.
Could very well be it. But Duggan, though, after the match, lays DDP out with taped fists.
He got punchy again, dude.
He got punchy. Like, I just don't get the fact that, like, he's just like, look at my taped fist. Watch me knock him out. I'm going to knock him out so easy.
Back up.
Right. Like,
bare knuckles are much more effective.
Yes, exactly. Like, this is what the fuck. You know, like we don't really do the what the fuck WCW thing no more. Because it's not really much what the fuck, but I mean, this one deserves it, right?
What the fuck?
And to think about it, in the match, there was a spot, an entire spot, in building to Hacksaw's comeback in this 5 minute match. So, I mind you, this is probably about 1 minute in length. DDP cuts the tape off of Hacksaw's fucking hands, and that is supposed to, like, hinder him. It's supposed to be a weakness.
I mean,
He lost the comfortable tape.
Now his hands are all sticky.
Now when he punches me, I get a clammy, stiff punch of the knuckles.
Yeah, it sticks to my face. It's residue from the glue. But Travis, fuck that match. Let's get away. I'm even going to say, fuck listening to Sullivan and Giant.
As much as I love a Sullivan promo, I would love to hear Tony the Tiger interview Benoit Arn Anderson.
I don't even have that one.
No!
I don't.
That was a good promo.
I fucking hated that promo.
Fair enough.
I thought Arn spoke like a fucking school teacher and also
looked like a school teacher.
Yes. Benoit was fucking atrocious. And Benoit, like, who naturally stands with his fist up by his chin?
Just a man while he's that kills his wife and kid.
You got me there. My argument is...
You want to talk about Benoit being weird? It's summed up by the definitive conclusion of his life.
Pretty savage, but true. I mean... The guy did deserve it, I suppose. You should have seen it coming.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, man. Fucking Lee Marshall.
He's great. I do love those those Lee Marshall road reports, though, from WCW in 97.
I don't remember them. I really don't.
They're great.
They're great. Oh, fucking hell. This brings us, Travis, to a double dog collar chain tag team match.
What a fucking clusterfuck.
Oh, man. This, like, I gave Tenta and Bubba, like, a lot of shit because like, it was stupid, right? But, I mean, really, that match was Omega Okada compared to this fucking match. This match was... No, sorry. I got to save some harsh criticism for Mongo and Gomez.
Oh, my God.
Because that's still to come. But this match was fucking shitty. Because, like...
It was entertaining to watch.
If you liked watching two split screens, because that's all it was.
But,
I
mean...
Split screens the whole time.
You're
like, not
watching...
even split screen. You've got the whole Bash at the Beach promo, and then you got two tiny micro boxes showing two fucking things that's going on.
Man... This was not a short match.
No?
This was not a short match.
Like, how long do you think this match really was?
Fucking 14 minutes.
It was 11 minutes.
Okay.
Like, it felt like it went on.
It felt like 14 minutes.
It felt... I could have said 19, honestly.
And they didn't stop doing shit.
No. Like, even when the match was over, Travis, they still continued. Fucking hell.
Like, it felt like a fight, but a fight where, hey, I'm going to climb up on something. Oh, wait, no, I'm too fat. And that's what happened the entire match. That and Brian Knobbs hitting the fucking shit out of Johnny Grunge. Just, like, I mean, laying into him with every single fucking weapon he could find. Like, disgusting shots. Like, Rockin' Mankind, I Quit match at the fucking Rumble.
When the match is over, Brian Knobbs, or not Brian Knobbs, but... Fucking, who were you saying? What's his name? I'm sorry, I'm kind of like the violator has hit me, Travis. At one point in time when the match is over, they shoot Johnny Grunge, and it's just like a look of shock in his face. Just like, I was in a match with New Jack, and I didn't feel like this. He's just like walking away.
And can we talk about the table?
Oh, the one that Johnny Grunge just slides off of?
No, the one that wouldn't break.
The one that Rocco Rock just fucking just, yeah.
The Japanese table that Rocco Rock literally, like, broke his back on.
Yeah,
because
the unbreakable
he tried
table.
To go through it, like, three times.
Yeah, and then he has to break a table outside and the end of the match to get his heat back because he's Sabu.
Oh, my God. Like, I mean, Jerry Sags wrapped a chain around his entire arm and went for an axe handle.
Yeah,
off
but
the
rope. Coolest fucking spot in the world was in this match, and that was the clothesline with the chain.
Yes,
that
was awesome.
So fucking
that was
dope.
The finish.
That was the finish. But like, that's what this match led to, and somebody got tipped over of a lifeguard fucking tower. Right?
They went into the sand.
They did.
And it's not the last time they go into the sand.
No, no, no. Fucking take a fucking penalty for that one.
Like, there was a rubber shark in this match.
Yes.
A rubber shark was used as a weapon, and Dusty Rhodes lost his shit.
He did. Yeah, there was a rubber shark.
Like, almost, he lost his shit more here than he did when Kevin Sullivan went into the ladies' john.
His ultimate shit losing was when...
The bicycle?
No. No. Well, like, this match, this show, it's when, I believe it was Savage starts to run wild in the main event.
And he says that line over yes! and over again.
Yes. That line will come. You'll hear that line.
That was... I was wondering when it would end. Like,
Tony Schiavone even interrupts him and just keeps on going. It's unreal. Like for the most part, like the commentary was on task of promoting the main event this whole show. And a lot of the witty commentary wasn't really there because the main focus was, you know, they were mad and they were hyped up and they were ready to go. But what they made up for in commentary and being so tight there, man, the rest of the show, like the commentary is better than most of these matches.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that.
Cuz this match, like, this just I can't remember what happened in this match cuz it was just too much. Like,
no, there was way too much. I remember a lot of guardrail flubbery where Rocco Rock really tried to do something off the guardrail but kept messing up
cuz he's Rocco Rock.
The lifeguard perch spot.
Yeah, that was dope.
The amount of times the Knobs hit Johnny Grunge real hard with surfboards and chairs and trash can lids, like, Jesus Christ, he hit him.
Rubber sharks.
Like, looking at the fact that both members of Public Enemy are dead now.
Yeah.
They were really dumb.
Public, like, Enemy?
Survival of the Fittest. They've tried some stupid shit. You know, Darwin's Theory kind of wiped them out.
Yeah. I mean, you could look at it that way.
But Nasty Boys also, I don't have I have no like for them at all.
I like Jerry Sags head over heels better than fucking Brian Knobs.
Yes, and...
I think Jerry Sags is not a bad wrestler.
No, he's pretty good. Knobs, yeah. I've always hated.
Yeah.
He's a piece of shit.
He's just a fat guy that just can't move. He just shouldn't be in the ring.
Yeah.
Especially, at least at this point in time. Sure, in the 90s, they were both, you know, pretty slim, but
and Knobs definitely let himself go.
Oh yeah.
And I don't want to say that I'm not a fan of Public Enemy, because I do think that they provided the most entertaining matches out of most tag teams on the roster at this point. And they've gotten over.
Yeah, and I don't really look back at the Public Enemy as, like, when I look back at ECW, Public Enemy is the last thing I think of. I've never been a huge fan.
And that was early ECW, too. Like, that was 95, where they were really, really popular.
My outlook on the Public Enemy is just a tag team that jumped around. You know, like, they went other places way too much to even really get a push.
Yeah. Money hungry.
Yeah. Grass is always green on the other side.
They could have been a really good indie act.
They could have been a really good act anywhere, really, if they just stuck to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, they were getting over everywhere except the WWE. I don't think they ever really got over in the WWE.
They were meant to get over. You know what I mean?
And especially when they had the Dudley Boys who looked like them, and then Too Cool who did their gimmick but better. You know? Hmm.
Yeah. When you look at that gimmick's been done many times better than Public Enemy did it. At least in my opinion. I've never been a fan. I'm sure we'll
get
Rocco
Rock. That's it.
Busted. Yeah. No. Yeah.
Like, Rocco has some wrestling talent.
He at least tried really hard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
blame a guy for trying.
No, he tried to be an innovator. I mean, like, the braids.
Yeah.
The fucking braids.
Doesn't he look like Paul Roth?
He really does. He really does. But yeah, no, like we said, the clothesline with the chain spot was the end of the match.
And the coolest spot.
It was the coolest spot of the night, really. Sags pins him for the win, even though we had that great Rey Mysterio spot. That spot popped me pretty hard.
Definitely the best spot of the match. I wouldn't say of the night, but
you're right. But Public Enemy then beat the Nasty Boys after the match.
Table finally breaks.
Yeah.
And nothing was resolved.
Yeah, they just leave.
Yeah.
like
they lose. The faces get their heat back and then just walk away.
Yeah, basically no sell that loss and then just leave to the Nasty Boys theme song.
And what a theme.
Nasty Boys. Travis, sometimes commentary makes you hang your head. I don't remember what the theme is for it because I don't write it down no more. But, you know, sometimes commentary is great. Sometimes it's okay. Sometimes it's really bad. And sometimes it's Val Kilmer good, right?
The weed has hit us hard.
The violator is violating me, that's for sure. But this is the art of commentary.
Two of the fastest and two of the biggest now going at it head first.
You know, when Tenta was born, he was 187 pounds.
I don't believe that at all.
I'll tell you what, he's a little bottom heavy there, too, to get up that pole. Now he sees it barrage, if you will, to try to bend this thing down. I do not believe that he can climb that pole with his body and get that sock.
Listen
and,
to this.
And they, what? Listen to what?
The belt.
Strapping Tenta.
Got him right in the gills there.
He has no gills.
That's right. He's not a fish.
He's not. And he's not an avalanche.
The boys win.
Goodness. What a deal, brother.
That was a mess.
What a mess.
That was a mess.
That was the greatest Greco-Roman power match I've ever seen.
Come and get some of this. Who's bad now? Who'll be bad now?
That's right. You tell him, Dream. Back in the corner.
Who'll be bad
the
now?
The quickness of Savage.
Who'll be
like
bad
I
now?
Said.
Who'll be bad now? Who'll be bad now? Deal on him, brother.
Who'll be bad now? Who'll be bad now? That's a great song. Who'll be bad now? Who'll be bad now?
The Dusty House to sing.
Yeah, I agree. I wish this music would end. Here we go. It's starting to fade out. The beautiful piano is about to fade out, and it's gone.
Transition.
Into the WCW World Cruiserweight title match between Dean Malenko and Disco Inferno. And now this, I will say, is probably the best storied match of the night. This match was a great story. I loved this match. I thought this was the second best match on the show.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
This was my... I thought the story of Disco Inferno... being this aloof that is so arrogant that he can never get the job done and actually hanging in there with Dean Malenko and kind of proving himself and like realizing that he can't be a fucking the arrogant prick that he usually is to beat Malenko. I thought that was a good story. And him coming to that realization, I thought was fun.
Man, you and I had two complete opposite views of this match.
This whole mid-card. The whole thing, we had the exact opposite views of it. Even
amazing.
Like the Tenta match.
So on Nitro, Disco Inferno, Dean Malenko was having a match with a guy called, Bobby Walker.
Okay.
His name was Hard Work Bobby Walker.
Does he also walk hard, I wonder?
No, man, he just looked like Shelton Benjamin.
Fair enough, man. Hard work. Bobby Walker.
Yeah. So they were having a match, and Disco comes out with that gold platinum record that he's been sporting because apparently he has a fucking album that went platinum or gold.
You didn't know that Disco Inferno had an album out in July of 1996?
Oh, we found out before this show, but it was an experimental English band.
An experimental English techno band, which... automatically tells Taller Fudge to turn the fuck around.
GTFO.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. So, during this match with Hard Work Bobby Walker, they're just wrestling. Disco comes in, his music plays, they're in the middle of the match. They're still wrestling while Disco comes out. Disco's dancing around the ring with his music playing. Like, the match is literally still going on. They are not paying attention to him at all. Disco gets in the ring. He stands up on the turnbuckle with his record. The match is still going on. Like, it is such a weird image to watch. But the best part about it is that they do a monkey flip spot, and Bobby Walker stands up. He finally notices Disco Inferno, and Malenko drop kicks him, and Bobby Walker runs right into Disco, and Disco plummets right to the outside. And then that's when Disco gets upset and fucking kind of challenges him to the Cruiserweight title match.
Yeah.
That's where he comes up with Mr. Personality.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty dope to start the match when he said, when I'm done with Mr. Personality,
yeah,
you could always come to my disco party, disco dance party.
Dean cut such a bad promo on that intro, too.
Benny did.
God, he's such a... You want to think Benoit cuts an atrocious promo with his school teacher, Arn Anderson? Man, Dean needed a manager.
Yeah, I can see that. And that's kind of why I got the ladies' man gimmick in WWE, so that somebody could manage him, I guess.
Who managed him?
I don't know. He was fucking Lita for a bit. I suppose that was the whole storyline, wasn't it?
No. Lita let him on.
Yes. Yeah, they're just fucking random women then.
Hookers.
Godfather's
and he
hoes.
Probably paid for it.
Maybe. Maybe they wanted to know.
No,
it was
hookups
like
for the hookers.
Maybe they just wanted to know what it was like to have sex with a midget. I'm making a short joke. Dean Malenko's short like a midget.
Oh.
Yep, okay. Violator.
That one flew over my head.
Violator.
Probably because I'm short.
You're taller than me, so.
But we're both short.
We're average height, Travis. We're like 5'10", 5'11". Like, 5'10" is average.
With my hunch, I'm probably 5'8".
No, you're not. You're taller than me with your hunch, for fuck's sakes.
Fair.
But anyways, this match starts off really fast. I quite enjoyed how Malenko just sends Disco into everything that he can find. And he's just like, hey, you want to know what it feels like going to the post? Here you go. You want to know what it feels like going to the fucking rail? Here you go. Just fucking everything.
This felt like a long squash match to me. That's what it felt like to me, you know?
Well, I mean, I get that. But, like, Disco did get some offense in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he did.
But most of the time was him avoiding the Texas Cloverleaf and trying to not get submitted and just weaseling his way out of it. Like the one time where he got his, like, literal pinky toe onto the rope, and that's how he got off with it.
Like, I can see where you're coming from, where Disco hanged with Dean Malenko. Like, he lasted.
Yeah.
He didn't prove himself to be a viable threat for the Cruiserweight title. He didn't prove himself to earn this shot at the title because Malenko literally destroyed him the entire match.
Like, he was in control for three quarters of the match. But, like, it showed you another side to Disco Inferno. It showed you that there was a serious side there, that he could be. It was kind of like a Taguchi. Where Taguchi's all fucking fun and games.
Yeah.
But on the big show, he can always pull
it out.
And
Disco's really fresh at this point, too.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly.
Like,
you
he's not an old act. He's a relatively new act. Like,
yeah.
I don't think he was on WCW TV until Nitro started in 95.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah.
And so I like, the match itself is not really what I liked. It's the story behind the match is what I really liked. But
my favorite part of this entire thing would be involved in two things. Dean Malenko getting pushed to the ground, kipping up, and then just pushing Disco back. I just thought someone getting pushed to the ground, kipping up, and immediately firing back with a push. It's just like such a simple spot, but like so quick.
Yeah, Dean Malenko is just that good. See?
And then, oh God, Dean Malenko hitting a brainbuster on Disco. Bobby Heenan calls it a pile driver. And Dusty Rhodes calls it a brain buster. Dusty Rhodes corrects somebody.
Yeah, that's true.
For once.
But now, mind you, Dusty Rhodes was around all that time when Arn Anderson was using the brain buster.
Yeah, they were called the brain busters.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right.
But isn't there... Is there some irony in there that a man called the Brain got corrected
by
son of
somebody,
a Puma?
Somebody with a half a brain.
Well, I've got half the brains you do.
That's true. That's it. That's it. But, I mean, and to come around 6 degrees separation, Sid tried to stab Arn with scissors. So,
God.
But Travis Dean Malenko would end up getting a win with a Tiger driver into a Texas Cloverleaf, which is a nice little setup. And
I haven't seen him use that yet.
No.
I've seen him use the power bomb, but not the Tiger bomb yet.
Yeah, so I thought that was pretty dope. And this.
Oh, here we go.
This brings us to possibly the worst match we've reviewed. No, we've reviewed Charmel and fucking.
Yeah, we've reviewed some stinkers.
In the last few volumes, this is the worst match, I feel.
Worst match of this volume, for sure.
Yeah.
We did watch the Master Blasters match. That was pretty bad. A lot of matches in that tag tournament on Starrcade 90.
They weren't this bad.
With the Team Canada and Team Russia.
At least they could work.
That was so bad.
At least they could work.
Okay, this
nobody in this match could work.
This was
nobody.
Pretty bad.
Like, they were crisscrossing each other because they didn't know which way the other person was going to run.
There was one single good part about this match, and it didn't even involve the match, and that was the usage of the crab cam.
The fucking crab cam.
Tyler, do you know anything about Joe Gomez?
No, that they call him, what do they call him, Desperado Joe Gomez or something like that?
Something like that. Oh, this must be dating back to before Great American Bash at this point. But Joe Gomez was going to show up on Nitro. They've been hyping him up as a very talented young Mexican wrestler who teams with the Renegade. But he keeps getting attacked before his matches.
Obviously because he's such a shit wrestler.
First time I saw him, he got a horseman beat down. I didn't even see his face. Just saw him laying on the floor. And then on one Nitro, he came out to save somebody. As well as three other people came out to save this other, you know, it was like horsemen and fucking whatever it was. But yeah, Gomez is fucking having his first real match here since being promised as a very great up and coming wrestler in our timeline anyway.
Fair enough.
Joe Gomez. And it's against Mongo.
I mean, who thought it was a good idea to put these guys... Two guys that maybe fucking...
We're going to put Mongo in
9 months together.
Flair and Arn Anderson for your first match. Next match, I'm going to let you fly solo with some random nobody.
You can call the match with Joe Gomez. What a fucking...
They made a big mistake putting him in one, a singles match. Two, a match with somebody that can't carry 80% of this.
Yeah.
Besides for his tiny comeback that he's gonna fuck up.
Even the Irish whips were bad, Travis. Like,
okay, what was the spot that he fucked up so fucking bad? Oh,
well, that atrocious roll through pinning attempt?
The roll through pinning attempt, the sunset flip?
Yeah.
Yeah, that he couldn't get up
from. Oh man.
Wow, man. Wow. Wow, that was atrocious. This guy's supposed to be an athlete.
He's supposed to be, yeah.
Like, he spent 10 years in CTE camp.
Football. That's the other name for it.
Yeah.
The lesser known name. A part of me wants to... I don't know. I feel like Mongo, I feel like he was probably not a prominent... part of the Dallas Cowboys or the Chicago Bears?
I highly doubt it.
I highly doubt he was.
WCW had him for a long time. They don't get people that are good at their job for a long time.
That's true.
That aren't in wrestling.
That's true.
Michael Buffer, he shows up every once in a while. They don't have him for a long time.
But like, everything about this match sucked. Mongo's hair, Mongo himself.
Even his tombstone
sucked. Gomez looked like nothing. He looked like a generic jobber type guy.
Yeah, not special at all.
No, at least Deborah looks good.
Yeah. I liked Heenan and Dusty talking about the dog. Commentary was good.
Yep.
So that was consistent. This match was a drag, though. You know, a fucking wash.
Yeah.
Fucking complete bathroom break.
It was. It was. And then Mongo, yeah, he wins with a Tombstone Piledriver. And he said, you know, we did it horseman style. And I was like, horseman style is not a shit match. Like, until this point in time, everybody that was in the horseman could at least have a good match. Like, Luger could have a good match.
Paul Roma was the exception.
Fair.
Paul Roma is considered the worst.
Can't be worse
horseman.
Than Mongo.
Hey, man.
It's not possible.
Paul Roma is actually considered the worst. Like, to you watch that Horseman documentary that the WWE put out.
Yeah.
And Flair, Arn, even Hunter was a talking head for it. And he was just like, Paul fucking Roma. Like, what the fuck?
It can't be worse. It can't. But there's no possible way it's worse than Mongo McMichael.
No. Hey, I'm not arguing with
no,
you.
No, you know what I mean?
I would rather take a Power and Glory match over a Mongo match any day of the week, except for the Great American Bash match we watched last month.
That's fair. I mean, I still don't want to see Mongo. Fuck.
But
that
was not a terrible match.
I mean, no. No, it wasn't. It wasn't terrible, like that match, but that was all because of Flair and Arn. But
well,
I mean,
well, King Green coming hard and coming heavy was pretty great.
And he was actually not that bad. Like, the fact that Mongo's the one that stays blows my mind.
And Mongo tries to use that 3-point stance gimmick that Kevin Green was doing for his running attacks.
He has a hard time staying up. Equilibrium's a little off.
Something tells me that Mongo was probably not in good shape.
Yeah.
I mean, besides for looking at how out of shape he looks.
Yeah.
Just seems like he's just, yeah, physically out.
Yeah, no, I agree. He's, you know, he looks winded, and we've given this match way too much fucking time.
We have.
Yeah, this match does
not
deserve
it. Let's get to this great promo.
Let's do that. Let's do that. Let me preface this by saying this is a promo with Mean Gene is a huge part of this promo. He takes it over to the point where I feel like this promo wasn't supposed to be as long as it was, because it's 3 minutes long. But Mean Gene keeps on interrupting, and Flair, being Flair, has to be the end of the promo. He does not want Mean Gene to end it. And every time Mean Gene interrupts and starts talking to the girls, Flair's just like, what can I say next? He's just looking around. What can I say next? And then just comes back with something else.
What a pro.
Yeah, what a pro. Yeah, I've got to end this. You can't end this on me. But here we go.
I'm joined once again by Miss Elizabeth. I'm joined by woman. Please, you distract me.
Miss
I can't
Elizabeth
do a job
so
as a
hot.
Professional if you're going to constantly do that to me.
God, yeah.
Ric Flair,
she
you've got to have other things on your mind
here.
This evening.
In here.
An opportunity
in
of gaining,
yeah.
Yet, as I said Burn earlier, on. Another trophy for your large trophy
you
case.
You can never have enough trophies in life. Now, Mongo did it once. The Nature Boy will do it twice, and then Double A and the Crippler will take down the Devil and the Giant, and tomorrow night at Nitro, woo, I will be a man with a U.S. Championship and a World Heavyweight Championship. Mean Gene,
so you're supposed to face the Giant the next night.
Woo,
if they
right
win.
Out. It's Bash at the Beach, and we are
like
here in Daytona
the tag match.
To stop. Woo! And profile. Take a look at what's not south of the border, brother, but right here in Daytona, La Cucaracha.
Elizabeth, I'm very
Woo!
Curious. What
Conan,
kind of a
man? They say that you're a man with 1,000 holds. Tonight, brother,
no.
You gotta
no,
meet a
wrong
man
guy.
That has unlimited knowledge of the greatest sport in the world. Right, Mean Gene.
Do you mind if I talk to the ladies?
Don't mind at all.
I would assume across the street at that big, large hotel overlooking the Atlantic Ocean, Elizabeth, you're going to be throwing a little party. I know you've got some extra money.
Yeah.
In your pockets.
She's even playing the part really well with Gene.
There's going to be a great big party.
A great big party.
Yeah.
Is it something that I should be included in?
But she's been also doing that on every single interview with
Gene.
Woman is that true? She's always like touching him and all that kind of shit.
So we can have a private party, Gene.
Private party?
Yes. Yes.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Please,
Mean Gene,
don't embarrass me.
Let me make reference to one more point. Macho Man, we know you're focused. We know you've got great plans for later tonight. But Macho, never stop looking at that camera. Never stop thinking, wondering, and praying that someday, woo, the lovely one could be back home. Because, brother, it's never going to happen. Woo!
I think, Ric Flair, you have said it all, as they say in the beer commercial.
My friend, not only said it all, done it all. Woo! Conan, grab your best hold, kid. Nature Boy, coming your way. Woo!
Still, wrong guy.
You know, woman.
Still another minute.
If anything,
left.
You know, I've got a commitment elsewhere, but I must say, if anything were to happen, you've been very, very kind to me, very attractive. I just don't particularly care for the people that you hang around with these days.
Is that true? Well, I just don't believe that, Gene. I believe you have it bad for me, and you don't care who I hang with or what I do. Isn't that right, darling?
Mean Gene, bottom line is, woman makes one more advance towards you, you won't be able to go back to Sarasota. You'll be across the street on the penthouse with the Nature Bar and the girls partying in Daytona. Woo! All night long. Tell him, Mean Gene. Conan, we're fixing
Thank
to
you.
Walk that aisle.
In addition to wrestling, Woo! We're going to have a little pole vaulting competition here. Let's get you back up to the ring for more action.
What a fucking perv.
All right, Gene Okerlin once again. And ladies and gentlemen, what are the two
that
matches?
A little long. But yeah.
Conan's little post-grunge theme song.
Yeah, nothing says Mexican like post-grunge. Nothing. But yeah, a really fun promo. A really long promo. You don't really get it in listening to the promo, but you've got woman at the end of it just tugging Gene, just trying to pull him off screen. It's just it's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. It also makes no sense because it's almost like both of these guys are trying to get more over than the other in this promo.
This is like a fucking cock match.
It was kind of awkward to watch.
Yeah.
And I'm glad
you felt the same thing.
It's more awkward to listen back to it as well because in audio form, you don't have any of the visualizations.
Yeah.
So you hear Flair and he's going on nonsensical rants. Like
where does Macho Man come in?
Not needed.
No.
Liz's money. That's the only correlation there.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not feuding with Macho Man right now.
No.
You should be on Macho Man's side right now.
Right. Exactly. Macho Man is not your enemy tonight.
Like, yeah, it makes no sense, and Gene went on far too long. It's almost like they needed to kill, like, a couple minutes.
I could see that, too, because the show's only 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Why not add a couple extra minutes on to the tag match or the Conan and Flair match?
Yeah. No, I agree, but, I mean, they decided to go with this instead. Were you a little off-put by, maybe it's me being violated right now, but woman screaming outside, just off put me.
Oh, it makes me wonder. Oh, nah, God, should I say this?
No, let's not.
Oh, I'm going to say it. Going to say it. Benoit had a big house and he murdered Nancy far away from where Daniel was sleeping.
Jesus Christ.
Those screams, he knew. He knew that those screams would be reached by fucking miles away. He'd probably murder her in a fucking soundproof fucking office.
So Liz takes a bump.
Oh, man. I apologize in advance.
That's
all I'm going to say.
No, you apologize for what you just said.
I apologize in advance for when this drops.
Okay, fair enough.
We get the Benoit digs in every now and then. He never leaves our timelines. He's always there.
Yeah, he's one
like
constant.
Rikishi. He's pretty much always there,
except for this one. No, he will be.
He's already been there.
Sultan.
No, he's Fatu. Make a change.
Yeah, we haven't seen him.
I have on Ross.
You poor soul. Conan ends up going off on a clothesline. Ric Flair kind of pulls Liz in. She takes the clothesline with him. No sells it. Just gets right back up, shakes it off, fixes her tits, and walks away. And that was that spot. But also,
it's like a video game, you know, the refs and the managers, they're invincible.
Yeah.
They just get right back up.
Yeah. Woman shaking the bottom rope. How would that affect Conan on the top?
That was some shoddy workmanship right there.
Yeah.
Definitely. And also, let's talk about shoddy workmanship. Conan's singlet is missing an N.
Is it really?
It's K-O-N-A-N.
Maybe he was... That's how he spelled it in Mexico.
It's like Conan the Barbarian with a K, but they add the N, and they've added the N on every single WCW broadcast since we've started this.
Yeah. I wonder if that was for, like, copyright.
Well, he does have the AAA logo on his singlet, too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, like, just for, like maybe adding the extra N was a copyright thing.
Oh, that's possible, yeah.
Mexico really has
so
no
we could wear
laws.
It in AAA and WCW.
Yeah, maybe.
Save on that cost of buying an extra single.
Yeah, because that singlet looks so expensive. Pretty shy looking singlet, if you ask me.
5 pesos.
But myself, I thought this match was sloppy. It was a by the numbers flair match with an opponent that you didn't really think was viable.
No, the only cool part I thought of this match would have been the beginning where, like, Flair was, like, unexpected that Conan can match him.
Yeah.
And then Conan failed to really match him because this is a clash of styles. Every single match that Conan has had in WCW has been lackluster.
Yeah, I haven't liked one of them.
Even the Eddie match should have been great, but he got fucking knobbed in the balls, and that spot just ruined the entire match. By Conan's big bald dome. Like, what the fuck was that? They fucking reference it on Nitro.
Really?
They bring us back to that fucking replay of that spot on a Nitro. And just for no reason. Gene's just like, hey, I want to show you this. And Eddie's like, well, I want to. He like contends for the U.S. title again, and then they cut him off in the promo because they have to cut to a commercial break. It's amazing stuff. Poor amazing. Eddie Guerrero.
Riveting. Let's see here. The ref becomes Conan. Basically, gets the win, but the ref is distracted. Can't get to the pin. Miss Elizabeth has him distracted by her bosoms.
There's a lot of ref distractions.
There is.
Woman hitting him with her shoe.
Well, that's where this is leading to.
Yeah.
Woman hits Conan with the heel of her shoe, which that was another bit of shoddy workmanship, because that hit did not look like it was anything.
And it took too long for Conan to finally get up for it. It's almost like he didn't realize she was there.
Yeah. Yeah, it could have been. But then Flair picks up the victory with his foot on the top rope. If you're going to go big, go home. You know what I mean? Gotta go big. Travis, did you know, when was the last time do you think Flair was U.S. champion?
Man, I don't know. 1981.
Ding, ding, ding.
Holy shit, I got it right.
Okay, well, who did he lose that U.S. championship to?
Oh, man, that's fucking hard.
Prominent name in the WWF. Would lead on to be a prominent name in WWE.
Roddy Piper.
Yes. Yep. Not bad. Not bad.
Man.
You're fucking horrible at pay-per-view buy rates, but when it comes to random shit that you shouldn't know, you got it.
Story of my life.
Fucking buy rates.
Bad at money. I'm good at useless shit.
We then get a promo by Mean Gene, basically with the police, saying how he recognizes the name of the, or recognizes the voice of the third person in the room with the Outsiders, but he can't put a face to it because it's really muffled and low.
Yeah. But it's someone that has worked in the WCW.
Yes. Yeah. Somebody he's familiar with. And so at some point in time, the brain was just like, hey, can you ask those, give those cops some money and ask them what who the third man
and
is?
And he asks, and then he's like, hey.
I'm not part of your scheme.
Oh, good stuff.
Even though Mean Gene is Scheme Gene. But I really liked this segment. I thought this segment was fun.
It was the best of the three where he was outside the locker room.
This is the only one that's really noteworthy. Like, we didn't even touch on the last ones, I don't think.
They weren't worth it.
No. So, Arn Anderson and Chris Benoit take on Kevin Sullivan and the Giant. Mongo rears his fucking ugly head and baits Giant back to the back.
Yep.
Allows Kevin Sullivan to just get his ass handed to
Horseman
him.
Style.
Horseman style.
Horseman style, baby.
This, honestly, I hated this match.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
Sullivan is fucking abysmal. Like, we got to see the worst back body drop in the history of pro wrestling.
You mean post-match?
Yeah.
What the fuck was that? Why? Of all moves you're going to hit post-match, I'm going to put you up top, your dead body, and I'm just going to fucking back body drop you.
Everything. Everything. Sullivan was just so bad.
Well, they played in the sand, you know. They didn't brawl backstage. Sullivan had a match with the Jobber, by the way, on Nitro, where he brawled backstage and tried to get into the women's washroom, but Doug Dillinger blocked him. So he just sprayed a bunch of mustard and ketchup on him.
No nonsense, Doug Dillinger, baby.
But yeah, Sullivan's days of having fun matches are slowly coming to an end.
I hope.
But he obviously still has this Benoit feud to go on for.
Yeah, yeah.
And that goes on for a while.
Yeah, it's... I figured it would by the end of this match. I mean, Giant gets a tag. Benoit and Sullivan end up brawling to the back. And then Giant immediately chokeslams Anderson for the win. That's the finish of the match. But after the match, Benoit ends up coming back and Sullivan, they end up brawling. But it's really
weird. Well, they go to the play-by-play platform.
Yeah, they do a spot
Benoit
there.
Benoit even dives off of it at one point.
Yep. But really, the most noteworthy part is Woman coming out and stopping Benoit from attacking Sullivan.
And that's
even
after
more.
The back suplex.
Yes. And then you look at it in one way, it's Nancy coming down to save Sullivan, who is her husband at this point in time, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, they haven't broken up yet.
No. The thing is that they break up because
of this angle.
Nancy and Benoit spent so much time together that they fell in love.
Because at the end of this match, when Benoit leaves, he takes Nancy with her.
After this match?
Yes. When the Giant
because
comes,
she's with the Horsemen right now.
I suppose. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. But still, I mean, it is where it would, you know, lead to.
Like, this isn't the point where they're together yet.
No,
because
no.
This is a pretty, like, they've detailed this story out pretty well.
Yeah.
The whole fucking triangle.
I don't mean like in real life they're together.
Okay, yeah.
I just mean like this is like the bridging to the fact that they're leading into this angle.
And they don't reference that they're married.
No, they're wondering
why is Woman out here, you know?
Yeah.
And that's good. That's good. Like, to make this kind of fleshed out more, it's better to reveal that at a later date that Sullivan and Woman are married, to have Woman come out to Sullivan's aid multiple times.
But it makes no sense with the Ric Flair angle. You know
Sullivan
what I mean?
Sullivan and Flair were in cahoots. Like, Sullivan and the Horsemen were in cahoots.
Yeah, but you wouldn't pawn your wife off to get fucked by Flair all night long every night.
No, but...
You know what I mean? It doesn't make sense. Like,
there's only so much time that Woman can dress up in, like, bondage outfits and shit.
Well, yeah. But, like, I would at least have Woman off TV for, like, let's say a month. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, and then come back in, like, regular clothing and not in a fucking dress.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you can at least separate yourself from the fact that she wasn't just...
But WCW is good at doing things very fast. They're good.
Well, you mentioned it earlier. It's a chaotic show. Every show is chaotic.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's all chaos. I think they make most of the angles up week by week. And they got one long-term angle, and that's the NWO.
Yeah.
And that's not long-term at this point.
Oh, it will be long-term. It will be the prominent angle for the next 3 years.
Yeah, but they don't have an idea of where it's going to go.
Oh, no. No, you're
once,
right.
Once they add a couple members, it's lost control of where it's going to go, you know.
Yeah. But let's get to the real reason why we're here for this show. And this is the Outsiders and Hulk Hogan, the NWO, taking on Lex Luger, Randy Savage, and Sting. So Mean Gene, he confronts the Outsiders, and let's just spy in and just see what they have to say.
I don't have police protection with me at this time, but I want to confront you in front of this full house here at the Ocean Center and millions of others across the country and around the world. I don't see three men here tonight. Where is your partner?
You know, Scheme Gene, Chico, you know too much already. All you need to know, little man, is he's here and he's ready.
Well, if he's...
Well, wait a minute.
Where is he?
Is your partner telling me that your third man is in the building?
Oh, he's here all right, Gene. Let me tell you something. We got enough to handle it right now, right here.
Oh, for quite... Come on.
Oh, man, I'm going to take
come
you
on.
Out. They cannot handle our three guys.
They can't handle our three guys.
Who are, like, yeah. Sting's one third of them is WWF born and bred, not your guy.
Yeah. I mean, Randy Savage would defect to the NWO quite early.
Yeah.
He's one of the next members to join, is he not?
No. 97. No.
Is it 97?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know he held that long.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Oh, it might be like winter of 96, but we'll find out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Fuck. Hall and Nash's music, man.
Yeah.
Some basic stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just by the numbers. Basic.
I didn't even think about it when they came out. I was just expecting the NWO music.
Right?
I didn't even think about it. And I was like, well, that totally makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, they don't even have names until like halfway through the match.
Did they actually call Nash and Hall in the match?
Not Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, but Hall and Oates. Yeah, halfway through the match, I think Tony Schiavone is like, well, that is Nash on the left and Hall on the right there.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's it. Outsiders, Hall and Nash.
So almost immediately, Sting inadvertently takes out Luger with a Stinger Splash.
Yeah, Kevin Nash and Luger are on opposite sides of the apron, and Luger bumps his head on the post.
Yeah, if you actually look closely, Sting doesn't even touch Luger.
It didn't look bad. It didn't look good at all.
And so this allows them to have a two-on-two match where Luger gets stretchered out to the back.
And he doesn't come back.
Nope, doesn't come back. And then, I mean, like, whatever. I mean... Luger's the worst part of this match anyways.
But that's the story of this match. They're taking them out one by one, and that's how they're getting over the whole 3-on-2 advantage, right? Because Sting shortly gets taken out after that.
Yep.
And it's left down to Scott
and Kevin, Scott Hall and Nash against Macho. Yeah. And at some point in time, too, like when Sting, at one point in time, Savage is hurt and Sting's in the ring. And then that's when, like, Dusty starts getting up in arms.
Looking bad.
We're done for. Savage is hurt, blah, 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 blah. And, like, with Luger, when Luger went back and how the commentary was like, just send somebody else out. God damn it. Just send out somebody else.
Yeah.
It just showed a lot of urgency. I really liked the commentary during this match.
Well, yeah, and it would make sense. Like, why not send out another guy for Luger or Sting or something like
why
that?
Why not?
Like,
anybody.
It would make sense because this isn't just, oh, these three guys just don't want these Outsiders. No, this is supposed to be a hostile takeover, right?
Yeah.
So why not make it seem more urgent by maybe having some guys come out?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they wouldn't have been able to achieve what they achieved.
No, I mean, it was done for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was to make the match make sense, not have Hall and Nash completely decimate three of their top guys. And it's turned into an actual tag team match. And at the end, when you think that the WCW guys are just about to finish it, you know what I mean? Like, Hall and Nash get the upper hand, and then... Hogan is on his way out, and you just assume He's there to save Savage, his longtime foe and friend.
Mega Powers,
yeah.
Like, and they just teamed up against five other guys at Uncensored.
Yeah.
So you'd think that, fuck, they can take out two people, right?
That's a part of the story they never talk about, is the fact that the last time you seen Hogan, he was in a tag team with Savage.
And that's, yeah, you know, that would have been a good little layer to touch upon.
Yeah.
And maybe they do, like, leading up to something later on that, like, they were good friends and shit like that. Not really, but...
Well, like, they bring it up. Heenan is sure that he's there to save Savage. But, you get the leg drop, all the garbage coming into the ring. We've really chronicalized
what happens here. He leg drops him two times before.
Yep.
And then takes out the ref, and Scott acts as the ref for the pin. So this match really doesn't actually have a definitive end.
No, it really doesn't, does it? It's a no contest, essentially. But, I mean, I will say this. I don't know what people's usual thought is about this match. This match has a good story.
Good story.
But it's boring as fuck.
Yep. Like, they talk about those times where when Scott Hall's on, he's on.
Yeah.
And for probably the biggest match of Scott's career, I'll go out on a limb and say that this is probably the biggest match of his career.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's
bigger. Other than the ladder match.
That was the only thing that I was going to argue with, but this propelled his career bigger than that ladder match did.
He didn't seem like he had his working boots on.
No.
Nash is...
lazy.
We all know. We all know what Nash is all about.
Yeah.
He's had one solid match. That was one that we already reviewed, man.
Yeah, with HBK.
You might argue that he had a good match with Brett, but Nash is Nash.
Yeah.
And that's what you got to work with.
Yeah, that's what you get. This match is what you get with Nash. That's it. He's literal five moves of doom.
And it's a shame because Sting, great worker. He's really fiery when he comes in for this match. Randy Savage, we all know Randy Savage is a good worker. And
even now.
Yeah, absolutely. And when Luger works with the right guy, Luger can have a great match.
Yeah.
And they got to work with these two.
Yeah. And Hogan on top of that. Really.
Thankfully, Hogan came in for what he does best.
But, it's... I mean...
Nash swatting away cups.
Yeah, we talked about the garbage and everything that went on. The post-match, we really went through. Aside from, like, the promo being a great fucking promo, Hogan's first heel promo that you've heard in years was fantastic.
Since AWA or early WWF?
I'm going to say that you probably didn't even hear one there because Freddie Blassie was his manager.
He would say lines, but it wouldn't be a full heel promo like this. And he doesn't even have this kind of delivery on the rest of his heel promos in his run. This was just, like, a fucking passionate heel promo that he cut. It was almost, it felt like the most real Hogan promo.
Yeah, because he's talking about how he made everybody in the Northeast rich. He's the reason why you guys are all watching wrestling.
And that feels like something Hogan would think.
Yeah.
You know, that felt like a real promo.
Yeah.
Hogan's promos never feel real. Hogan feels like a character, a superhero.
Yeah.
He never. You don't get a Terry Bollea promo.
No. But this
felt like a Terry Bollea promo.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely.
Until he called the New World Order the New World Organization.
Yeah. Get the name of the fucking place right, man. Fuck. I'm glad you brought that up because I really didn't like that at all. We get everybody leaving on a very unhappy note, really. You know what I mean? Like, not because the show sucked, but just because, you know, just like... Yeah. Hulk Hogan turned on everybody.
One of my favorite send-offs for a pay-per-view ever is, quote-unquote, Tony Schiavone. I don't know. I'm Tony Schiavone, and Hulk Hogan, you can go to hell. Straight to hell. Just the, I don't know. I'm Tony Schiavone. What the fuck?
I don't know what's going on, but I know my name, and I know Hulk Hogan's going to hell.
Straight to hell.
So, Travis, this brings us to the last part of our show here, the scores, bores, and sores. What would you say would be your score of the show?
Carson City Silver Dollar match.
You're a fucking gem, you are.
And the debut of Psychosis.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go with just like that match in general, the Ray and Psychosis match, and the Hogan promo.
Yep. I didn't want to be the guy that chose the NWO formation as it.
I mean, you got to. It's a score.
It's the obvious one, but yeah. Definitely, that's the easiest, best part of the show.
Your biggest bore of the show.
Hmm. Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Okay, I'm going to go with Mongo.
Yeah.
Fuck Mongo. And Sore, what's your Sore?
The Sore? I would say the lack of care for anything that's not the the hostile takeover, the NWO. Right. The Horsemen probably could have felt more prominent on this show had everything not been about the NWO.
You had three Horsemen matches, and they were trying to do the trifecta, and you really didn't come off as important.
And mind you, one of them was Mongo.
Yeah.
Terrible, terrible stuff.
Yeah.
They could have done it a lot better.
They could have. My Sore is going to be Psychosis's head after the tope into the guardrail. That's my Sore.
That's a good one. I like that.
But Travis, our next show is WWF's International Incident. Do you have the card?
Yep, I do. What a slim card. Hey, we always love these In Your House shows. They're only an hour and 46 minutes.
Yes.
So the first match would be a non-title tag team match on a pay-per-view. The Body Donnas taking on the Smoking Guns.
Without Cloudy.
Yeah, Cloudy's not there. Hog, Henry O. Godwin, facing Mankind.
Should be a burn burner.
Yeah. Talk about long squashes right there.
Yeah.
Mark Mero takes on Stone Cold Steve Austin.
King of the Ring match. Why would we want to see this again?
Yeah. And Goldust taking on The Undertaker. We've already seen this.
We've already seen it, but I'm okay with this one.
This match, this show is a one-match show.
Yeah.
And it's not even what we were promised in the build-up. It'll be Camp Cornette taking on Owen Hart, the British Bulldog, and Vader, taking on the People's Posse. I know, Simpsons fans. The Party Posse was the boy band that Nelson Muntz, Ralph Wiggum, Milhouse, and Bart made up, but this is the People's Posse.
It's one of my favorite newer episodes of The Simpsons.
Me too. Yeah. Eva Netanyahu.
What?
Eva Netanyahu.
Oh, yeah, the song?
Join the Navy. The People's Posse is Ahmed Johnson, Shawn Michaels, and not the Ultimate Warrior because he is G-O-N-E. He is gone.
Yes, he would no show a bunch of events and Psycho Sid would take his place.
Yeah, Psycho Scissor Sid.
We'll get much more into the detail of the Ultimate Warrior situation on our next episode.
There will probably be quite a bit of news for that one.
I'm sure there is. I've read a little bit of it because, I mean, I've already skimmed through those observers for the WCW portions. And I've seen all the headlines for the WWF stuff. So, Warrior's the biggest story. But yeah, that's our next show. That'll be out probably March 1st, more than likely. And then, just if you want to just give us a follow on Twitter, at the Federation. Travis is at FudgingUp333. And then we have Facebook, the Federation Podcast. You can buy our t-shirts at whatamaneuver.net. Three different designs, many different garments to choose from. Go over there, you can get one for $24.99, I think. I can't remember. Got confirmation that Mitchell Rolridge finally got his shirt.
Good. Hope you enjoy it. It's comfortable.
Oh, my God. I just almost lost my voice there for a second. That might be the violator in what he was talking about, how, like, you got perfect thoughts in your head, but they're hard to come out. That's what that sound could have been.
My thoughts are fine, but they can't come out.
Yeah, my thoughts are fine, but my mouth don't work. But you can also donate to our Patreon and PayPal, like Ty Loney, Chris Savage, Christopher Spalding, and Big Body Sam. And, check me out at Suplex City Limits every Friday.
And I was on there last week, 2 weeks, whenever this thing comes out.
With the B-plus players. Should be out this weekend. But the B-plus players, Jared, Rando, just a slew of stuff. It was just a place to
smoke
joints.
Check out the B-plus players.
Yes.
You know, like, this is a wrestling podcast. I'm sure most of you guys listen to rock or punk rock or something like that, you know. This is what they call wrestle rock, and they put out some fucking great wrestling related music.
They
did. They got a new album coming out.
Yep. They were releasing a song a week for 15 weeks, I believe it is. Is it 15 songs?
Up until, what did he say, April or May or something like that?
Something like that. May, I believe May 25th or something.
But they just came out with one called AJ Styles. We listened to it before the podcast.
Yep.
It's pretty good.
Yep.
Pretty fucking good. Well, these guys are great. And they're from our home country.
Well, I mean, our home country, our home coast.
Yeah, our home coast. Nova Scotia is really close to Newfoundland. Our home, as all of you should know, because we've talked about it a lot.
And if you're listening this deep into the show, I mean, you probably know.
Yeah. So give them a follow on Twitter, B Plus Players. Not the plus sign, but the word plus.
Yeah. And yeah. You got anything else you want to add?
Nah, I think we should just keep on rocking in a free world, Dan.
Doot, doot, doot.
Thank you. time.